Gino Bartali was a hero. He was an athlete, too, and not so coincidentally, his mastery of a sport had a good deal to do with his heroism. He was a cyclist who saved lives by riding throughout Italy during the Second World War for a purpose higher than money or glory when the opportunities to ride a bicycle for money and glory had disappeared. In a new book titled Road to Valor, Eileen and Andreas McConnon tell the story of Gino Bartali's triumphs before, during, and after the war. The authors join me now from NPR's New York Bureau. Welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eileen, let's start at the beginning with how Gino Bartali acquired his first bicycle, which was apparently something of a clunker even by the standards of the early 1900s, right?
That's correct. And even before he had a bicycle of his own, he would sneak in rides on his father's bicycle, which was much too large for him. So he assumed a pretty awkward position. He couldn't even reach up to the seat, so he'd have both feet on the pedals. He had to put one of his legs through the crossbar. He'd reach up with his arms, hold the handlebars, and basically painstakingly wheel himself around his little hometown on the outskirts of Florence.
Eventually, Gino Bartali became a champion. He won the Tour de France in 1938. How big a deal was the Tour at that time?
Well, the Tour was one of the most popular sporting events at the moment. When Bartali won it, he was on newspaper cover pages around the continent of Europe, and he also won a lot of coverage in South America and North America. It was the big sports event of summer. Bartali was the Tim Tebow of his era, or the Joe DiMaggio.
The Tim Tebow of his era might be spectacularly pertinent. We'll get to that in just a minute. Andreas, under normal circumstances, Bartali would have defended his title the following year, but circumstances were not normal in 1939 for bicycle racers or for anybody else in Italy. How did the Italian government under Mussolini attempt to use Gino Bartali?
Under Mussolini, Bartali became a big and powerful propaganda tool. So Mussolini and the fascist regime would try to use him as a way to sort of promote fascism abroad.
Tell us a little bit about how Gino Bartali became involved in the resistance in Italy and specifically how he began saving the lives of Jewish citizens.
Gino Bartali was drawn into the secret relief work happening in Florence. This is around 1943. Middle of World War II when the Nazis occupied Italy, because he was asked by a mentor of his. This was the Cardinal of Florence, Cardinal Elia Della Costa. And at this specific moment in the fall of 1943, Jewish refugees were flooding into Florence, and many of these people needed shelter, and most importantly, they needed identity documents. So the Cardinal, he had monasteries and convents around the area of Tuscany and Umbria, the neighboring region, where he could shelter these people, but he had one critical problem. He needed to get these identity documents to these different Jews in hiding. So that's when he asked Bartali, who was the one person who had a good reason to be on these roads in Tuscany. He'd trained on them earlier in the war. He'd been a bicycle messenger on these roads. So he was the one person, when cycling through the region, could be recognized easily as a national hero in training.
Eileen, how did you go about finding out precisely what Bartali had done and whom he'd saved?
The research process for uncovering the war stories related to Bartali was fascinating, and we started by reading every last Italian and French publication we could find about Bartali to figure out which of his teammates, his friends, his family could possibly be still alive. And in that respect, we found some of his closest teammates, as well as his wife, his widow. But we also wanted to make sure that we, you know, learned the experience and understood the experience of Italian Jews in Italy at that time. So we basically, through old-fashioned reporting, started talking to people who introduced us to other people. And in this way, we found the one character that we feature in the book who was actually sheltered in an apartment that Bartali owned. And the way that we'd found that character is we'd spoken to one Jewish-Italian survivor in New York who connected us to someone else in London. And that person in London had literally gone to elementary school with the sister of the character who was saved.
Yeah. During the 1947 race in Italy, the Giro d'Italia, Bartali was taunted during that race with what you have called in the book, quote, an anti-Catholic slur. And apparently this is not something he was able to just shrug off.
It wasn't. You know, Bartali was a very, very religious person, Bill. But when he saw this slur, somebody had yelled at him that he was a false preacher, in a little bit more colorful terms in Italy. He got off his bike while in the lead, went over and hit the guy and then got back on his bike and finished the race.
But didn't finish first.
Yeah, exactly. He ended up losing the Giro, but he did win the stage.
Is it fair to say that although Bartali was a determined and triumphant athlete as well as a hero in terms of the way he assisted Jewish citizens in Italy during the war, he was not exactly a warm and fuzzy guy?
That's to put it mildly. He has a nickname in Italy, which is called Ginettaccio, which means Gino the Terrible. And I think, you know, that's probably a bit harsh, but he did like to speak his mind. He had a fiery temper, and I think it was many of these contradictions that sort of drew us to Bartali. He could be very religious, but he could also get into screaming matches with his fans. He could be a great endurance athlete, but he also liked smoking and drinking a fair amount of Chianti.
Bartali was ridiculed even in Italy when he returned to the Tour de France in 1948. Everybody who followed the sport assumed that he was too old to compete at the top level. But tell us about how Italians responded as the race went on and Bartali established that he not only could still compete, but that he could win.
Well, in the beginning, he was totally written off, as you said, by the press. But as things started turning his way later on in the tour, people celebrated in the streets, there were parades, people drinking wine everywhere. It was really kind of one of these epic moments in Italian history.
And to add to that answer, many people felt like the country was sort of on the brink of civil insurrection. And so Bartali's win and kind of his turn at the tour brought them something to rally around and something to unite the country at a moment when it really needed it.
Was he happy in that role?
I think it was a role that he wore, you know, uncomfortably, but with some pride as well. It would be a challenging one, of course. And Bartali himself said that, famously, that I don't know if I saved the country, but I gave it back its smile. And that's probably the best way to think about it.
That's a terrific line, isn't it?
Exactly.
Andreas, it strikes me that if ever an athlete had earned the right to rest at the end of his career, Bartali had. Tell us a little about Gino Bartali as an old man.
Well, unlike many of today's professional athletes, Bill, Bartali had not earned enough money while racing to be able just to retire and sort of count his winnings. So Bartali then went on, actually, and sort of reinvented himself and had a second career as one of the first telecasters on television doing color commentary for different races. And he also wrote. He would write a column famously called One Mistake a Day, where he pointed out one mistake every day that other racers had made.
Siblings, Ai Lee and Andreas McConnon, are the authors of Road to Valor, a true story of World War II, Italy, the Nazis, and the cyclist who inspired a nation. The book is published by Crown, and the authors joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Ai Lee and Andreas, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Philip Kisabika, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view our photo galleries, please visit onlyagame.org. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word this week comes from the Miami Heat's Dwayne Wade.
I mean, I played with Shaq before. I played with a dominant player, and I knew when to defer and when not to defer.
You might think he was talking about when to take a shot, but in fact, he was discussing some particularly esoteric IRS rules. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.